Health Radio. I'm your host, Robin Daly, and I'm the founder of the UK charity Yes to Life that has, for over 15 years, been supporting people with cancer in the UK in learning about and accessing integrative medicine. Cannabis is a subject that is of immense interest to people with cancer, not least because of its huge potential to help in a wide variety of ways. A change in the law at the end of 2018 seemed like the start of a new era for cannabis as a mainstream medicine, but in practice, patients have experienced barely a ripple. But pressure for change continues, not least from the commercial sector. Today, I'm going to begin by speaking to Scott McGuire, who's CEO of a company looking to increase the use of cannabis as a mainstream NHS treatment. I'm speaking to Scott over the phone. Hi, Scott. Thanks so much for joining me on the Yes to Life show.
Thank you, Robin. It's nice to talk to you about Canterbury and medical cannabis.
So, with great fanfare, it was announced that as from the 1st of November 2018, patients in the UK could be prescribed medicinal cannabis by specialist doctors. And after years of stalemate, during which the evidence for the medicinal benefits of cannabis, they just grew and grew, but the law remained fixated on ineffectively banning recreational use, it did indeed seem like a genuine breakthrough. But the insanity of all that is that, as far as I know, despite the life-transforming effects that cannabis can have for some patients, hardly a single doctor stuck their head above the parapet and actually prescribed any. So, to me, this is a shocking travesty, but one that I believe you have some better news about.
Yes, absolutely. We have fulfilled two prescriptions.
Two, hooray.
Yes. Finally, some prescriptions are starting to be written by specialists that are able to see the benefits, read the clinical data, and understand what's going on in other jurisdictions around the world for a whole plethora of indications in patients that really need a different, better therapy.
Mm-hmm. So I'm just interested to know how you've managed to break the stalemate. What are you doing differently?
We have surrounded ourselves with key opinion leaders across all of the indications for which cannabis is legal. We have two key opinion leaders in pain, Dr. Ben Thomas and Dr. Daniela Tanucci. They bought into the gospel of cannabis and have seen the benefits that their patients have had with it. We have a outstanding neurologist from Ireland, Dr. Dave Morehouse, and we have a key opinion leader in hematology. So we've really surrounded ourselves with outstanding medical professionals in order to have a medically led charge.
Great. So you've got a crack team of experts there.
I would argue we have the best on the planet.
Okay.
For this industry, for cannabis. The best SAB on the planet.
Okay. So what are you proactively doing to encourage doctors to prescribe?
Well, we're working with them to access the research and the data being generated by key opinion leaders across the globe. We're paying for their attendance to medical cannabis conferences so that they're able to get their knowledge up to current date and understand the best practices in medical cannabis. Mm. So we're investing time and money, as well as our scientific advisory boards spending their time and efforts to understand the benefits of cannabis.
Right. So you're trying to build confidence, basically.
Exactly right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And in terms of your company, what's the product, so to speak? You're obviously promoting the use of cannabis, the prescribing of it, but what are you actually going to provide?
We'll be providing each and every patient a pathway to get their cannabis prescription. We'll fight for every patient. There have only been 150 prescriptions written to date. So every patient that is in need of this product will work with those patients, work with those specialists, spend the time and the effort. And this is not a money-making enterprise at the moment, because we wind up losing money given the amount of effort and time that we need to put into getting the prescriptions fulfilled. So, but our goal is to, you know, look at the patient first and take their needs into consideration first.
Right. But you'll have a range of your own products aimed at particular conditions?
Well, we're sourcing right now from the Netherlands and from Canada. However, there are other producers coming online across Europe and across North America to offer patients a wider spectrum of formulations and delivery systems. Right now, it's predominantly the flower, the bud, as they call it, which is vaporized, but there are oils that are going to be compliant to EU GMP specifications that will be available later this year. So just to work with the manufacturers to make the product available in the absence of us having our own product, which we are attempting to do by applying for a growing license in the UK. And we'd be only the second company in the UK to have a commercial high THC growing license.
I see.
But that is down the road.
Okay, so partnerships to start with, but eventually you do want to have your own product.
Yeah, absolutely. We want to be at the cutting edge of research. We're in the process of implementing a cannabis research lab in London, and to compete by having, you know, the latest generation formulations and delivery systems, always staying a step ahead of the competition, all of which is better for the patient, better in terms of the formulation, and more user-friendly for the delivery system.
Okay. So I'm just interested to know what your background is and what brought you into this field.
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, I've been a life science investment banker for about 20 years, and I just, you know, never really was that satisfied in a career that was purely dominated by money. I wanted to get involved in creating drugs and making a positive impact on global human health. So I've been part of two companies that have, in the healthcare life science space. One is a dialysis clinic chain that I co-founded in the UK 12 years ago. That's now the second largest chain of dialysis clinics in the UK, with 26 clinics treating over 2,000 patients. And my other business that I led for 14 years was a orphan and rare disease company. I listed that on NASDAQ as chairman and CEO back in November 2016. November 2017, I thought I would retire, play a lot of golf, and basically get myself in shape. And I quickly realized after 6 months I'm not suited to sit around and do nothing.
Right.
So I got a call from a hedge fund that had been an investor in a number of my companies. And he said he would like for me to become the CEO of a cannabis business that he was planning on putting together. And that was May 2018. And I said, no way, not interested. I'm a life science biopharma professional. So I'll pass. Thank you very much.
Right.
But during the course of the summer, I started reading clinical studies about how cannabis was making a real impact on patients, anorexia patients, AIDS-wasting patients, chemotherapy-induced nausea and vomiting, and pain. So it was quite interesting research. It's statistically significant data. So there's some real efficacy evidence here. But it was my dog. My dog was the epiphany.
Yeah.
My dog, Bozy, was a nine-month-old King Charles Cavalier puppy. He got very ill August 2018. He hadn't eaten for 5 days. We brought him to a specialist hospital in Bern, Switzerland. He was there for another 4 days, not eating. and they finally diagnosed him with stage 5 liver cancer.
Right.
And they said, look, the prognosis, given he's not eating 2 days to 2 weeks, you should consider putting him to sleep when you come back to the hospital the next day. So I have two young boys, very emotional drive to the hospital the next day.
Sure.
And they said, please, let's bring Bozy home to die at home. So we brought Bozy home, and given that I had been reading about cannabis and anorexia and AIDS wasting and CINV, I thought I would give it a try to, you know, it was a bit of a Hail Mary, try cannabis to get the dog to eat.
Yeah.
So I bought a bag of cannabis from a local ski instructor, breathed it into Bozy's muzzle, and he attacked a hamburger within 15 minutes.
Wow.
And he would not eat a steak, he wouldn't eat hamburger or any of these things that a dog would normally devour, because he had no appetite. Well, I repeated that twice a day for 2 weeks. He got his strength up. We were able to bring him back to London, and he was put on a high dose of steroid. He's still alive today. Cannabis absolutely saved Bozy's life.
Amazing.
Steroids had sustained his life, but cannabis saved his life. And it's at that point in time when I decided to, if this can save a dog's life, imagine what it can do for humans. And that's the point in time when I really started to focus my energies on this industry.
Mm, what a great story. Yeah, well, that's right. I mean, you know, I've talked to a lot of people over the last few years about their use of cannabis and the potential of cannabis. And it certainly seems like the really amazing thing about it is not just the amount that it can offer, but the number of different situations that people can be helped in is extraordinary.
Oh, it's got a wide range of applications: CNS disorders, chronic pain, PTSD, and we're just scratching the surface and understanding the benefits of this plant. We'll look back in 10 years and cannabis will be like what mold was in the 20s and 30s, where it was a mining of new drugs.
Mm-hmm. All right, I wanted to ask, the name is obviously related to cannabis. Does it go any further than that?
Yeah, gamma ray, we're all interested in the universe here in canna ray. So gamma ray, a lot of energy. A gamma ray emits more energy in 30 seconds than our sun has and will in its 10 billion year life. So we tried to take that energy theme and apply it to our business as well as cannabis. So it's a mix of gamma ray and cannabis.
Okay, good. All right, thanks. So just wanted, you know, a lot of our listeners will be quite familiar with cannabis, but not all of them for sure. So can we just explore the main types of cannabis? There are these two main strands of cannabis, one of which we're seeing on the high streets now and another which we're not. Do you want to just cover the territory a little bit and explain the legalities and the illegalities of each?
Right. Well, there are the two main constituents in the plant are CBD and THC. CBD is a non-psychoactive component that's sold on the high street. Now, the CBD formulations sold on the high street do not have the illegal constituent, THC, in them. So, in fact, Canna Ray is marketing a CBD brand that is purely CBD, used for anxiety, used for inflammation, and sleep disorders.
Right.
But it does not have the illegal substance of THC. There are CBD receptors in the joints, so it does have benefits for chronic pain, for anxiety. You know, it's an amazing product that's been used for hundreds of years as a medicinal. Then there's the THC constituent, which is illegal, and that's what gets you high. That has a psychoactive component in it, and that's illegal. But that's used in the medical prescriptions to alleviate the whole host of CNS disorders and chronic pain.
Mm-hmm. Right. So the CBD that's available, if you get good quality, it's definitely a good tool for a lot of people, isn't it? But it
Absolutely.
Yeah.
A year and a half ago, I didn't know CBD from THC.
Right.
But I've been, as a CEO and think too much, I take it on a regular basis for anxiety, and it's amazing how it just takes the tension off of the day.
So, despite the illegality, there's a lot of people using the cannabis with THC in it in this country. Any idea how many?
There was an article that came out last week that 1.4 million
wow.
UK residents are using THC for medical ailments. They're using it illegally, which is a shame that they have to go to the black market or, you know, deal in the back alleys in order to self-medicate. But there's been a market change even the last year and a half that I've been involved in this industry. The medical community is more open-minded. So there's a wave of adoption that's in the mainstream medical community that's coming. And in 10 years from now, I'm a firm believer that cannabis will be the first line therapy for chronic pain, replacing opioids.
Well, I hope so. The opioids have certainly not done us much of a service, have they?
Oh, they're horrible. They're highly addictive. In many cases, they do not alleviate pain. Another case study, my wife had shoulder surgery a while back.
Mm-hmm.
So she was prescribed OxyContin, a very heavy opioid. And in 20% of the cases, it leads to nausea. Well, she's one of the patients that was getting nauseous constantly taking the opioids. I had a medical cannabis sample from California, gave her that. She slept through the night and said, this is a lot better than the opioid. It works better, and she's able to sleep.
Right, brilliant. Well, I hope and I think you may be right about that changeover. Fantastic. So with the THC variety, well, I'm thinking now particularly this show is about cancer. It's about integrative medicine and cancer. And so there's a lot of interest in cannabis products. And the areas in which you've already alluded to, it's showing the most promise, are dealing with side effects of regular therapy, of chemotherapy. But also dealing with chronic pain, which, of course, a lot of cancer patients have to deal with some horrendous pain. So am I right in thinking that the THC variety is needed for both of these? Is that correct?
Yes, the THC is the medical cannabis. So that's what's prescribed. And the THC is what boosts appetite, lessens pain, although CBD has been shown to lessen pain as well, because there are CBD receptors in all of our joints.
Right.
So both CBD and THC can be used for chronic pain. CBD has been shown to lessen epileptic fits for epileptic patients, and THC has been shown to alleviate post-traumatic stress syndrome as well. So there's more and more research coming out on a monthly basis out of well-known institutes of further applications of CBD and THC. Tourette's syndrome, for instance, it's been shown to lessen the stuttering effects related to Tourette's syndrome. That's a new study that came out a month ago.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, and the epilepsy is the thing that really made the headlines and brought about the change in the law, is that the children who are suffering maybe hundreds of fits in a day were really given almost complete relief through taking cannabis. So it's a major thing for them. And as I say, as I mentioned in the intro, this is life transforming with a very low toxicity product.
And a product that's been used for thousands of years by many different cultures.
You were mentioning the applications of it. I understand that it's also used for people with MS. Is that correct?
Yes, correct. It's It's been shown to alleviate symptoms from multiple sclerosis. So it's approved for MS as well as epilepsy. Those are the two main CNS indications for which it's approved for.
Right. And over and above these approved uses, are there other uses that you know of which people are finding for it, which don't necessarily have the same level of science behind them?
Well, Tourette's syndrome, as I mentioned earlier, that's been shown in a clinical setting. It's been shown to alleviate the symptoms from Tourette's syndrome, as you had mentioned, multiple sclerosis, Parkinson's disease.
Parkinson's.
So there's a whole host of neurological indications that are being researched, and there's new evidence coming out almost monthly about a new neurological indication for which cannabis helps alleviate some of the symptoms.
Mm-hmm. And of course, the area that kind of plagues the drug industry is the area of side effects, that many a drug comes out and it's heralded as having these fantastic improvements in life expectancy, for example, but quite often there's a very heavy price to pay for that, and maybe not all the side effects are even realized at the time it's launched, and they emerge over the coming years, and it may eventually get discarded because it's just not worth using. Now, in terms of that kind of profile, cannabis is quite a different animal, isn't it?
Yeah, it's an all-natural compound, and a lot of the substances that you refer to, new chemical entities, they're chemicals, and over a long term, a lot of them lead to liver toxicity, chronic liver problems, or other problems in the organs because they're chemicals.
Mm.
And cannabis is an all-natural compound. All of us have an endocannabinoid system, just like the immune system, that processes cannabis and has receptors throughout the body for various constituents of the plant. And you know, it's amazing. I didn't even know that a human had an endocannabinoid system inherent to us. And I studied biochemistry, and I've been in the life science industry for 30 years.
Right. Maybe they did. They were keeping that piece from the industry. The whole field of cannabis has been so repressed.
Is threatened by this plant, and that's why they're putting a lot of money and lobbying power to work, because a lot of their franchises are threatened by the potential mass approval of cannabis for a medicinal remedy.
Mm-hmm. Well, right, fair enough. Okay, well, look, you've already mentioned a little bit of, you spoke about looking forward to what you're hoping for. Do you want to sort of sum up your vision for cannabis as a medicine? What do you want it to be, who do you want it to be available to? How soon? What do you want it to be used for?
Well, of all the patients globally, that suffer from an ailment, 60% suffer from chronic pain.
Wow.
And it's, I'm a firm believer that cannabis will be the prevailing therapy for those suffering from chronic pain. I suffer from osteoarthritic pain, and cannabis alleviates that pain. It clearly works. It doesn't have the addictive properties that opioids have. And I would argue in many of the cases that it works better than opioids in relieving pain. So our vision is to be a leader not only in pain, but across the whole medical spectrum in Europe, to working with patients to get access to these needed therapies, and also to be the leader in research, understanding more about the 200 constituents that are in the plant, and creating novel and better formulations with the end goal of providing a better therapy option than what's currently available.
And how soon do you think it will be in the UK that we go down to see our GP and they happily write out a prescription because we suffer from anxiety, they write out a prescription for a cannabinoid?
Yeah, well, that's currently happening in Germany right now.
Right.
So GPs in Germany are writing prescriptions. In the UK, it's been a slower adopter of cannabis as a viable therapy. So I would hope no more than 3 years, but that's really in the hands of a government that's been a bit of schizophrenic and saying they see the benefits, but they want to take a methodical approach and see more clinical evidence.
Mm-hmm.
But I would hope within 3 years.
Right. And part of that hope of yours, of course, is that you're going to actually provide some of that clinical evidence to help the process along.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, fascinating to talk to you, Scott. Thank you very much indeed.
Robin, thank you for your time, and thank your listeners as well.
Bye, Scott.
Bye-bye.
Well, it certainly sounds as though Canarae is bringing some useful resources and energy to the movement to adopt cannabis as a medicine. It will be interesting to watch how they get on. I'm also interested to hear what this commercial initiative looks like to one of my previous guests on the show, grassroots campaigner John Liebling from the United Patients Alliance. So next, I'm speaking to John over Skype in Thailand, where he's currently visiting. Hi, John. Really good to talk to you again.
Hello there, Robin. Yes, great to talk to you too.
So as a man with his ear to the ground when it comes to all things cannabis related, whether that's in the UK or the Far East, I'm sure you're aware there's a company called Canarae, whose CEO, Scott Maguire, I've been speaking to. They've been making a bit of a noise recently about breaking the impasse with prescribing cannabis in the UK. Now, from the public perspective, I assume you're quite pleased about this.
Well, absolutely. I mean, it, obviously, just over a year ago, when the law actually changed, it changed with great excitement and everything
yes.
like that. However, in the UK, we do have relatively traditional and monolithic medical establishment systems, and they've perhaps been a little bit more intransigent than we may have expected,
right.
In terms of their excitement about the potentials for cannabis, and really, we need to do things in the right order if we're going to move things on, and it's been relatively disappointing.
Yes.
That you can pretty much add up on the fingers of one hand how many actual patients have received a prescription for cannabis-based medicines within our National Health Service, which, ultimately is 99% of all medicines and prescriptions.
Hmm. Yeah, it's extraordinary, really, what a damp squib it's been there, because, of course, it did seem like at last we have change, but in reality it's meant pretty much nothing.
Certainly, to most patients. I mean, you'll have heard that there are something in the region of 100, some people say 200 prescriptions that have actually been issued in the UK. But pretty much all of those have been through the private sector and basically out of the reach of, 99.9% of all patients,
mm-hmm.
Because people are having to pay in excess of £1,000 a month and also having to wait several months while systems get set up and import regulations get sorted out and things like that. And in actual fact, an awful lot of those, even 100 or so prescriptions, have actually been repeat prescriptions for patients who have already gone through that process. So, it really has been, I'm talking to you right now from Thailand. And by comparison, we're looking at within the space of 1 year since January last year, when they also made a change to their regulations, and there are now 50 government-run clinics all over Thailand.
Wow!
All attached to universities, who are all growing, and there's been literally thousands of prescriptions issued, most of which have been completely free. I really do see the significant difference in approaches and attitudes, and it's wonderful how quickly things are changing over here, and I think it's a very good illustration of how things can actually change. They're not letting go of progressing the science. The science is being done, but what they've done is recognize that all patients can benefit under the supervision of doctors. I mean, they're not moving in terms of recreational cannabis use. And again, that's another example illustrating that just because you roll out medicine a little bit quicker doesn't mean that you have to let go of these other things and you can get medicine into the hands of patients. So hopefully I can bring some of that spirit and some of that some of those learnings back from here, back to the UK.
Oh, please. Amazing. I mean, that really throws a sharp spotlight on the immense conservatism here, really. You know, I talk about backward Britain, but I mean, the level of conformity that's there, that you'd think you'd have a fairly good handful of sort of maverick-style doctors who are more interested in helping their patients than they were in toeing the line.
Well, I mean, there are, and it's kind of, it's an interesting use of the word maverick, because on the one hand, yes, you would have expected so, but when you look at the examples of the doctors who, frankly, have taken that risk and put their head over and above the parapet, and obviously the first example that springs to mind is Professor Mike Barnes, who's a name that most people understand and have heard about. But within our medical establishment, they're not really engaging with him or even inviting him sort of into their fold, because they do see him as a maverick. Our establishment want to move more slowly. But I think, that's all kind of negative. But on the positive side, over the last few months, I've been to a number of meetings that kind of, if you like, almost happen behind closed doors. And one series of meetings, particularly at the Royal College of Anaesthetists with the British Pain Society, who towards the end of last year, issued a brand new position statement on cannabis. Now, to the average layperson reading that, it doesn't seem like a huge amount of change.
Right.
But actually, what I've noticed has changed is when you're actually talking. So I was talking to the actual president of the British Pain Society, and he definitely has a plan, and he's very pragmatic about it, but understands the way that these establishments work and the way that things must change, and the order that things must change in order to be most efficient. I mean, at the end of the day, if you stamp your feet, threaten and demand at our medical establishment, they are going to stick a wall up and not budge.
Right.
Whereas if you make little steps all in the right direction continuously, keep pushing gently, then change will happen. And I think throughout 2020, I expect, but also hope, that throughout 2020 we'll see more of the evidence that they need coming up, and as people, if you like, allow the medical establishment to gain knowledge and gain comfort with this subject, they will start to open up, and I think we will start to see more and more patients getting access.
Well, that is a more optimistic picture. Great. Well, I hope you're right.
So do I.
Yeah, right. So you've been involved for years campaigning for change in this area. Canarray is coming at the situation, of course, with a commercial agenda. Do you have a problem with this, or is it a case of, well, whatever works?
I think if you're talking about the principle, I don't think we would ever make any progress without the involvement and the investment that commercial enterprise brings. But coming from a grassroots campaigning background, where ultimately my priority is not profit, it's getting medicine into the hands of patients, I think we need to be vigilant and we need to be very cautious about sort of huge companies that are coming up and kind of pushing their own agendas over and above that what I would call the immediate needs of patients. And what I've seen in the last year, because you know we've seen this huge growth, this explosion of some of the biggest cannabis companies in the world, who have all these great ideas and they want to take over the world, and they all sound very brilliant. But in actual fact, they're being driven primarily by financial interests, by shareholders, and needing to show profit and things like that. And what we've seen throughout the year is that I think that focus and that set of priorities has now hit them rather hard, because you know they've hit the brick walls of medical establishment and process and things like that. Mm-hmm. And the ones who haven't perhaps done things in the right order, i.e. not worry so much about short-term profits and shareholder value sort of over the next kind of year, 2 years, 3 years, but focus absolutely on listening and talking to patients, understanding how and what science and research needs to be progressed, helping our medical establishments by, you know, providing support, providing data, and even providing sort of products and medicines for trials and things like that. With that change in priorities, I think those companies that perhaps have started somewhat more quietly, yeah, and are doing things in the right order without, like I said, the need to raise shareholder value, I think in the long term, those are going to be the ones that really start to make change happen and ultimately go the distance and be successful in the long term. And it wouldn't surprise me if maybe in the first quarter one, quarter two of this year, we see one, two, or three quite surprisingly big names sort of dropping into the background, because they've kind of invested in the wrong places, if you see what I mean.
Right.
And so for my part, I'm very much looking to those companies who are not leading with "look how big we are," but leading with, you know, look at our values, look at what we're giving back, look at what we're doing for patients, look at how sustainable we are, and all of those kinds of things, you know, before they start talking about how big and how valuable they are.
Mm-hmm. So you're supportive, provided they're in for the long haul and for doing it properly.
Yes, absolutely. And you know, they if they're showing their morals and their values up front rather than their balance sheets.
Right. Yeah, succinctly put. Okay, so one aspect of Canary's strategy I imagine you can't fail to like is that they plan to beef up the science behind cannabinoids as medicines.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I think again, coming from the background of campaigning and grassroots, there's kind of been a mantra of, you know, cannabis helps with this and cannabis helps with this, and, you know, cannabis is great for that. But what I think everybody now is learning and what a lot of the kind of grassroots organizations need to properly understand is that there is so much more to this plant and its hundreds of cannabinoids and flavonoids that we absolutely do need to do the research in order to understand what kind of cannabis works for this and works for this kind of person. What kind of cannabis can make things worse? I actually saw during the course of last year, there's a researcher who I travel the world to go and see. Well, I think you can catch him on YouTube. Professor Didi Meiri, I think it's Meiri, and he's an Israeli cannabinoid researcher. Who really, in terms of lab work, is doing some of the most exciting research into cannabinoids and their effects on cancer. They've managed to identify that whilst, yes, the two main cannabinoids that everybody knows about, THC and CBD, they have absolutely exciting stuff that's being progressed. But they've managed to identify in the lab that actually there are some minor cannabinoids that we don't even have names for yet that are absolutely critical and key in making sure that THC and CBD do the work you want them to do. And we're learning an awful lot more about this, but we really have only just started scratching the surface. And so any company that, again, is leading with cannabinoid research and is really getting into that kind of detail definitely has my support.
Interesting. All right. Well, look, it's been really interesting to get your take on this, John. Thank you very much for taking the time out to talk to us today. And I hope you enjoy the rest of your time out there in Thailand.
I certainly will. And in fact, it may be worth mentioning that in the I'm hoping in the next few days to pop along to a festival that's happening in the north of Thailand that they're actually calling a World Ganja Festival.
Wow.
Now, I know some people might laugh at that word, but that's the correct and proper word if you happen to be in Thailand for cannabis. They've launched, or they're about to launch, a kind of a Dr. Ganja doll, which is going to help them teach their children about cannabis as medicine and things like this. So it's wonderful to be here and perhaps see a little bit of how we'd like to see how things should be done.
Well, when you're back, I should very much like to talk to you about it, and we can do a show.
Yeah, absolutely. Look forward to it. And thanks ever so much, Robin.
All right.
To talk to you, as always. Take care, Robin.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, reasonable grounds for optimism from my two guests today. Change may be slow, but it does seem to be happening at last. Available seats for our London conference on March the 21st are dwindling, so if you plan to come, make sure to book yours. We have a stellar lineup of speakers for you on the topic of nutritional science and cancer. The day will start with an introduction by Sheila Dillon, presenter of BBC's food programme, and will feature Dr. Naysha Winters, Robert Verkirk of the Alliance for Natural Health, Nikki Robinson from Pennybron UK, functional medicine practitioner Joe Gamble, Talia Abramovich and Juliet Burridge from NutriTank, functional medicine consultant, nutritionist and naturopath Victoria Fenton, and dietitian and nutritional therapist Meredy Birdie. A veritable powerhouse of experience and expertise. To book, go to the Yes to Life website, that's yestolife.org.uk, and click the link that's in the top menu. Thanks very much for listening today. Please make a point of joining me again next week for another Yes to Life show here on UK Health Radio. Goodbye. Thank you.